Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hi, this is Antoinette Halloran. You are listening to The Fool and the Opera at Joy 94.9. And Dan is the fool, apparently.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of The Fool and the Opera. It's me here, Dan Vo, the fool side of The Fool and the Opera. And on the opera side of the show today, we've got the very lovely Antoinette Halloran, who will be talking about her upcoming performance in Tosca with Melbourne Opera. I've had a pretty good run with interviewees lately, I think, and very lucky. And it was wonderful to have chatted with Antoinette. So get to play you a few bibs and bobs. And I thought that seeing as she's sort of our premier Puccini lady in Australia, that I'd play a few different parts of all the different heroines in Puccini. And the interesting thing about Puccini is that, well, Antoinette will explain that, you know, he really did like the soprano, but also that all the women that he wrote for, except for the very last one, which was Turandot, was really written about women who die in tragic circumstances. And the only one that she didn't die in was really the last one, and he couldn't finish it, so he ended up dying instead. So I think that's the only reason why you have an opera that ends in that particular way with the Puccini opera. But it's beautiful music, so you get to enjoy some of that today. And we'll also play a track that is going to be very interesting, because, you know, I like to slot in a track at the start, which sort of, you know, mixes things up a bit. I'm going to just really mix it up today and put it in the middle somewhere. See if you can pick it. And also, because, well, talking of tragic ladies in opera who sort of end in a very sort of desperate, with a desperate ending, well, this first track comes from a particular opera that has a story like that, and it's Carmen. And you might know the opera, but this one is a musical that's based on the opera. It's called Carmen Jones. It was done a few years after it, actually a few decades after it. And it's basically was done by a group of African-American people in order to sort of turn the opera into a more relevant story. And I'm going to play this track and see if you can guess why I've played it. And if you can guess, you can always SMS in 0427-JOY-949. We've got the phone. Moonwalking Jerry's out there on the desk, so 96992949. He's waving his arms around, very excited about receiving calls about what you think the opera or this particular track, why we've picked it. And of course, there's also the email onair@joy.org.au. So I'm going to play it. It's called Stand Up and Fight from Carmen Jones. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And that was Stand Up and Fight from the movie Carmen Jones, which was released in 54, I believe. And I've been pointing out that one of the goofs in the movie was actually the fact that, because as you know, I'll be spoiling the story for you, but in the end, Carmen gets stabbed. And in Carmen Jones, she also gets instead of getting stabbed, she gets strangled. But apparently in the film, if you watch it very carefully, after she gets strangled, she's still blinking. Now, I've had a text message in from Paul from Port Melbourne, and he's very correctly said that it's the song is based on the Toreador song, is what the Geelong Footy Club uses as their theme song. So, congratulations to all the Geelong fans out there. Of course, one of the lasses who provides a bit of support to us by the end of the show, Tanya, she'll be driving in at the moment. And so, congratulations to your team, Tanya. You've done very well. It was a great game. So, all those very close numbers kind of get me excited. So, there you go. Geelong Football Club uses that as their theme, and it comes from an opera. And apparently, one of my guests was saying that when he went to see Carmen, there was a couple of girls in the front row that when the Toreador song came on, they kind of just looked at it and just went, no way. So that's quite funny. All those connections back to opera. And the next guest that we've got on, Antoinette Halloran, she's got a few connections to sort of contemporary culture as well, which is awesome. So I'm going to play it out. This is the interview with Antoinette Halloran. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Antoinette Halloran is a Melbourne soprano who's the favourite of people. She's known for her appearances on Spicks and Specks and for being one of the key people of Divas Inc. She's also dubbed Australia's Puccini soprano, and to live up to that name, she's actually here today to talk about her role in the upcoming Tosca by Melbourne Opera. Thanks for joining me, Antoinette.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, to start off, and just to break the ice, conductor Brian Castle's Onion tells me that you send some pretty naughty text messages sometimes.
Only in response to his. Yeah, he sends the naughty ones and I just kind of jive back at him, but he's hilarious. Have you had him on?
I have had him on, yeah.
He's written a fantastic book, which I just read the chapter on Tosca because I'm doing Tosca at the moment, and he just, I don't know where he gets his yarns from, but it's fabulous.
Have you got any yarns yourself?
Not yet. We just hit the stage yesterday, so I did the leap. Yep. So the Tosca, it's not no giveaway. I don't suppose to tell everyone that she jumps off a precipice at the end, and I had to do that yesterday. That was a bit scary.
Did you do it in full costume?
Yes, it's harder in costume. I popped a few poppers at the back of my dress, you know. But I think I was saying the reason it's so scary is that as we get older, we stop doing those crazy things. Like my little boy jumps all over the house and jumps off couches onto bean bags and things like that. But we sort of stopped doing that. So my body just was like, oh, sort of going into shock. Like, how do I jump and land from a height?
What are you jumping onto to start off?
Oh, three really dodgy, scabby-ridden mattresses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the budget's not huge for this show. So, yeah, but there is a fabulous story about one diva who had to do the leap off the castle at the end of the opera, and the stage management didn't like her very much, and she was quite a full-figured woman. So they replaced the mattresses with a trampoline. So she leaped off the edge of the precipice, and then she rose back up about six times before she disappeared for good.
Would have loved to have seen that just for the look of shock on her face the first few times.
Yeah, humiliating.
So, with this production, it's Melbourne Opera, so it's in the Athenaeum?
It's in the Athenaeum, that's right, yeah.
It's in English as well, isn't it?
It's in English, which Puccini would have been really happy about because he loved to take his operas to different countries and perform them in the mother tongue of the country that he was in. So, I mean, I love singing it in Italian. It's so yummy in Italian because of the way the language lies. But it's a bit harder in English because you're more determined that people understand you, whereas when I sing in Italian, I'm not so fazed if I blur a few words to make them sound more gorgeous. But I have to do all the consonants in this because it's in English. So it does clip it a bit. It makes it a little harder to sing, less voluptuous, I suppose.
Because our language finishes with a very consonant. Usually.
Yes, yeah. And there seems to be a lot more open vowels in Italian, long vowels. And so it's harder in English, there's no doubt about it. Mm. And also because people expect to understand it. So you have to sing differently when they expect to understand it.
And I presume that you learnt it in Italian first, so did you have to unlearn a lot of, you know...
In memory itself, and occasionally I'll go into the Italian, and I, you know, especially when it comes to Visi d'Arte, which is a famous aria, and to actually sing art and beauty instead of that, it's pretty tricky. And then when I stab Scarpia, and I'm giving away the whole story here, but, you know, it's a ridiculously funny story. Like, it's meant to be tragic, but it's ridiculous, isn't it? Everyone dies. Mm. But when I do the stabbing scene, I'm so sort of in the moment that I go into the Italian and I say, questo un bacio di Tosca, and then I think, oh no. So it's tricky. It's tricky.
That's lovely. And in terms of, because we're talking about Tosca and you're saying that, you know, most people die, which is true. The reason is because very much she's been described as this very diva that's very emotional.
Yeah, it's really hard to play, actually. I'm finding this one really tricky. And also because I've just come out of playing Mimi and Butterfly. Mm. And Mimi is the girl next door. So you have to get rid of all that sort of diva-ish bravado. And Butterfly is so humble, and her body shapes are sort of curved, and she always looks up under battered lids and things. And so to play the opposite, to play just a sort of a really temperamental diva, it's really hard. And also to make her endearing, because you think, oh, what a bitch, you know, what a psycho, you know. So you've got to try and play this really temperamental character yet still make her endearing. And so the thing that the director hooked me onto was Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind, because you know how she's just crazy and she's hot and cold, but you still love her. So, I mean, not that I'm no Scarlett O'Hara, but I'll give it a go.
I think I've read in the paper somewhere that your husband's kind of going, yeah, that's about right.
did you read that? Yeah, I was saying, I'm finding it really hard to play really temperamental diva, and he's like, sweetheart, have I got news for you? Just be yourself.
Now, I've got to congratulate you as well, because I hear there's another temperamental diva at home.
Oh, yeah, she's actually, she's really good. She's not so temperamental. She's got a great temperament. It's my little baby Charlotte, who I had 8 weeks ago. And she's a good girl. She's got her dad's temperament, very even-tempered.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was the most beautiful aria from Madame Butterfly, Une Belle Die, and I think we've played it a few times here on the show. And the pop culture reference to Madame Butterfly, of course, is that the big aria, which is what it's been called, was used in a show called Coupling, a sort of comedy series from the UK. And one of the characters, her name is Sally, she uses the Madame Butterfly aria as her safe place when she sort of hears news that she doesn't want to hear. She kind of just faints and hears this beautiful Madame Butterfly quartet just performing the song. So I think it's quite funny. And I think when she's flirting with one of the lads on the show as well, his name's Patrick. That's right, Patrick. He thinks that Madame Butterfly is a TV show about a woman that can turn into a butterfly, and confuses the Madame Butterfly aria, which Sally requests, with the Spider-Man theme. So there you go. Gary has just let me know that he loves Madame Butterfly, and that it was a beautiful aria. And of course, it was sung by Antoinette Halloran with the Queensland Orchestra, conducted by Stephen Mould. And, well, we've played it because we're talking with Antoinette Halloran, and she's known as our Puccini Lady. So I'm going to continue the interviews, and this is a bit more of the interview with Antoinette Halloran. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. So in terms of this whole notion of you being a Puccini soprano, in 2004, I think it was, you won the Puccini Foundation Award of the Australian Acclaim Awards. And that was quite a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, look, at the time I didn't realise what a life sort of changing experience it was going to be. Some people that were there when I won it just said I just looked scared. Like I sort of didn't know what it was going to mean. And it really did sort of set me on this path that has found me singing Butterfly in the Opera House a few months ago. You know, I went there and I was engulfed with Puccini, and I sang at his birthplace. I sang at his holiday home. I sang, you know, in all the places he lived and worked. And it's like I just became, you know, sort of full of this fantastic person. And I have a real affinity for his music. I just love it. And, yeah, I'm really happy that that's where it's led. And so last year I was doing four Puccini roles, which is sort of unheard of.
We'll come back to that, but in terms of Puccini and in terms of his music, surely you would have loved his music before you won the award as well. What was it about Puccini that kind of hooked you in?
Yeah, I did love his music. Oh, look, when I was really young, like 18, I'd pull out the big, you know, a Tosca and stuff like that, and I'd, you know, murder it. I'd sing it really badly, but I always was drawn to that music, and it's the verismo nature of it, that it's true to life, that it's not fancy, and you don't have to do those runs and cadenzas that sort of, to me, sound fabulous but emotionally leave me cold. So his music, the rise and fall of his music teems exactly with the emotion in the text, and that is just so such a joy to sing. And I also find, as an interpreter of his music, basically you just come as a blank slate and you just look at the score and it's all there. So you don't even need to put a heap of your own personality into it. You just have to be true to what he wanted, and the music sort of lives. The more you interpret it yourself, the worse it sounds. Mm. So you have to really be true to what he's written in the score, and he wrote everything he wanted in the score. So it's really, really, it's a fascinating music to sing. You have to sort of give yourself over to what he wants.
Is it usual for a McRobb girl to pull out the opera tracks, you know, while she was at school?
Well, we had an amazing singing teacher there when we were there. We had this huge diva soprano who'd won the San Aria and was on the verge of a huge international career, but then fell in love with an Italian conductor and gave it all away and taught at McRobb. So how lucky were we? So we had a massively talented diva teaching us at McRobb. So it actually churned out quite a few opera singers.
Right. So what was it that got you into opera in the first place? Or was it having a teacher that had that sort of experience and was trying to, you know, get you all involved into it? Or?
Yeah, well, McRobb is a entrance exam school, so you have to pass this entrance exam to show how smart you are, and I didn't pass it. But my sister was there, and so my mum kept pleading that they let me in, and they said, all right, well, we know she's musical, so we'll let her in as long as she learns double bass for the orchestra, because we need a double bass player. So I sort of went, oh, okay, I'll have to lug this, you know, huge thing around for the next 4 years. So I was on my way to collect the double bass, which was up in the school hall, and I walked past this door, and that's when I first heard this woman singing. And the hairs all came up on my arms, and I was only 15, and I just thought, I want to do that. So I knocked on the door, and I said, can I have lessons? And she said, no, you have to audition. And I said, well, can I audition? And she said, okay, do this. And she sang an arpeggio, and I just copied her big voice. Like, I'd never done it before, but I just kind of went, oh, like this. And it just came out, and it was very – and she was shocked.
Right.
And she just said, yes, you can have lessons. Start immediately. And she went and saw the music teacher and cancelled the double bass idea, and it began from there.
It's an amazing moment of serendipity.
Yeah, it was just a – it was actually a physical reaction. And I had a few of those in when I was in Italy as well, a physical reaction to the hills around Tuscany. When I could hear his music in the hills, you know, that's the hills are alive with the sound of music. It sounds so daggy, but actually every time I looked at the landscape, I could hear the beautiful sweeping melodies of his music.
Oh, wow.
And it's where he wrote, so he was inspired by that place as well.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and I've had a text come in from Grant in Melbourne who mentioned that the aria that we played just previously, not the one just previously, the one before that, Un bel dì, Vidrimo, is the first time that he's actually heard Antoinette sing it, and he wants to know when and where she's performing. I can post those details up on the blog, and that's at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. It starts on this Wednesday. It's Tosca, so she won't be singing Madame Butterfly because we missed that. That was at the start of the year, but she'll be performing Tosca coming up very soon in Melbourne, which will be very exciting. And so you should definitely check that out, Grant, because it's a wonderful opera. I love Tosca. It's, you know, one of my absolute favourites. And it's going to be, I think, the first time I get to... Yeah, it is the first time I'll be able to see it. I've only heard it, so... you know, in hearing it being a beautiful opera and then being able to see and hear it will be just, I don't know, it will just blow my mind. Now, before that, we had the aria from La Rondine. It's Ci Elbi Sogno di Dottoret. Doretta. I was about to go into the Decoré ad singing, but that's not right. So that's another beautiful aria. It's actually one of the first times I've heard that. So it's quite beautiful. I really love Puccini in general. And he's just, you know, able to capture the emotion in the right way. And look, if you want to send your texts like Grant has, you can SMS 0427JOY949. There's also the phone, Moonwalk and Jerry out there, 96992949. And there's also the email, onair@joy.org.au. So, hey, give us a message. It'll be lovely to hear from you. In the meantime, Antoinette Halloran, this is part three of the interview with her. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
In terms of saying that you've performed all these different Puccini roles, there was an album with Rosario, La Spina, last year, and you did cover off La Bohème, Tosca, La Ville, which I've never heard before.
Yeah, La Ville, that was one he wrote. It was, I think it was his, someone may call up about this, but I'm pretty sure it was his first opera.
Okay.
And it's got a beautiful aria in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you covered all the other ones as well. You've got, you know, La Fanciulla, La Rondine, Turandot, Madame Butterfly.
Mm.
What was it kind of like to go through all those different roles?
Well, Turandot's a role that I haven't done yet. I was in Turandot, but I wasn't doing Turandot. So that's one that I haven't covered. But and Fanciulla, unfortunately, well, fortunately for me, I got pregnant, so I had to pull out of that. That was in South Australia, which I was going to do mini there. So I learned a bit of that, but not all of it. But they're all just like putting on a glove. They're completely singable compared to some Mozart roles or Rossini roles that I look at and I just think, oh, how am I going to sing this? they fit.
Mm.
And he had a real thing for lyric sopranos. Like, I think he dated a few and I think he got to know them pretty well personally. So he spoke to them and obviously found out what really worked for them. A lot of composers write for the voice like it's an instrument, but he writes for the voice as if he really understands the voice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So does that sort of translate in the music, or how do you, for someone who's not musical?
That it fits like a glove. Yeah. Just that the it doesn't sit in an awkward spot. It sits in a comfortable spot to sing. And then when the climax comes, it goes into the sweet spot, which is the really juicy, high, gorgeous spot. But then it will come back down again. So it just sits really well and feels fabulous to sing so that you get to the end of the opera and you're tired but you're not sung out.
Okay.
Mm.
And, of course, as you mentioned before, Cho Cho San, Madame Butterfly, you sang at the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah, covering the beautiful Cheryl Barker for the first six performances and then going on in my own right.
Mm. Mm. That would have been absolutely amazing.
It was amazing. And also to work, like not work with Cheryl, but to cover Cheryl, so understudy her performances. Because I consider her one of the reasons why I've chosen this path.
Right.
I think I saw her Bohème in Melbourne, I can't remember, it must have been in the 90s, and I find her an inspiration. I love her so much as a performer, so, yeah.
I believe that you'll be also doing Tosca as well, in the same setup as well. Cheryl will open.
No, unfortunately, and this is why, nearly, I'm covering her.
Okay.
Well, no, actually, I'm not covering Cheryl, I'm covering the other Tosca, who's Nicole Yule. This is why doing it for Melbourne Opera is so fabulous too, because when I cover a role, if I'm not going on in the role, if I know I'm not going on in the role, I walk around with this crazy woman inside me who needs to get out. So this way I'm doing Tosca for Melbourne Opera, which is great, and she's out there and she's doing her thing, and then I'll go and cover it. And I won't feel so bad just sitting in the auditorium because I will have done it myself and have, you know, got the character out of my system.
Mm.
But, yeah, a lot of singers that reach sort of this level wouldn't cover, but I still cover because I've still got so much to learn. Every time you sit and watch an opera, you're learning something. And also that when you go on as a cover, there is no more exciting experience because you're thrown on at the last minute, and it's really exciting for me as a performer because it puts you immediately in the spotlight, immediately working with people that you've never worked with before, having to establish a rapport. It makes it very real and really exciting. So hopefully I'll go on.
And in terms of working at the level that you're at the moment, you're quite an entrepreneur as well. And so you've got quite a few projects that you run as well that is outside of, you know, the opera companies as well. There's Divas Inc., which is sort of a fascinating little group. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I started Divas Inc. with a really fabulous mezzo who a lot of people who love opera will know, Dimity Shepherd. And we started it because we were finding that there was breaks in between our performances where, you know, we just sort of wanted to do stuff. And we thought, why not do do some opera and make some money out of it as well. So we thought we'd approach the corporate sector. So we put together this show called Divas Inc., which is a 20-minute show to be performed at corporate functions. And it's hilarious. We turn up as incognito, because it's what Diva Inc. stands for, Divas Incognito. So we turn up as either girls from the company or local choir girls and sort of sing a song catered to the evening really shabbily and sing really bad. And we've got like choir robes on and our hair pinned back and glasses, thick glasses. And the people all think, oh, God, what are we in for? And then one of the divas recognises an ex-boyfriend in the audience, and right. She sort of breaks out of her robe and rips it off and tears her hair down and throws her glasses away and starts to serenade him with an aria, and then all hell breaks loose and the divas start fighting, and it's really fun. It only goes for 20 minutes and it just makes the function hilarious. So
that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's been really quite successful. We've been really quite busy to the point where we've now got about 10 girls who work for us, because often other girls are working in other productions. And last year we did Carols by Candlelight. We did 10 divas at Carols by Candlelight, and we sang the Carol of the Bells to open the whole television spectacular.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
It was brilliant. We were all dressed by Linda Britton. We all looked fabulous. And,
oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Yes, Linda Britton dresses are amazing. I've seen them.
Yeah, they're beautiful, yeah. Aren't they? We all wear them. Mm. Yeah.
Which is your colour? Do you get a colour each? Or?
We fight over them. We fight over them every time. We have to, like, toss coins and draw straws and tear each other's hair out. But there's generally for the Divas Inc. show, there's a pink, a light blue and a yellow, and I always want the pink.
I suppose all the fighting backstage just, you know, helps prepare you for what happens on stage.
That's right. I mean, the show's... There's a big fight in the middle of the show. Then we all make friends towards the end, but yeah.
That's disappointing.
Yeah.
We've got some up-and-comings as well, like Tiffany Spite and Danielle Calder as well.
Yeah. Tiffany's really busy now with Opera Australia. She's doing Despina at the moment, so we haven't used her for a while, but Danielle is absolutely fabulous and is sort of a core member of the group too. And she's the other Tosca too for Melbourne Opera, so there's two of us.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so yeah, we use Danielle. It's usually Danielle, Dimity and I, but we also use Ali McGregor, who's a fantastic opera singer. She does a lot of variety as well and a lot of burlesque. So we use her too.
Speaking of burlesque, you've also done opera burlesque at one point as well, haven't you?
That's right. Yeah, Ali McGregor, Dimity Shepherd and I did opera burlesque in the Spiegel Tent. I think we did it a couple of years running. It was really successful, really fun.
What did that involve?
That involved sort of opera with a twist. So okay. We kind of did. I did the butterfly aria, Un Bel D, but the purists should turn off the radio now. But I did it in street speak. So I sang the aria, like, operatically, but using sort of all, like, you know, the latest language. So, like, you know, yo, bitch. So yeah, all this kind of stuff. So it was quite funny. And then we did, you know, a lot of stuff in corsetry and sort of raunchy stuff. And we did, what's that song, AC/DC, TNT.
Oh, no.
In with horns, you know, the Valkyrie horns on and stuff. So it was all fun. Just opera with a real twist.
Mm. Mm. It sounds like you like to put a lot of fun to the opera that you do.
Mm.
Where does that come from? Is that, you know, it's just what you want to do, or are you kind of deliberately doing because you want to bring people into the world of opera?
Yeah, look, I mean, the more people that we can bring in, the better. But it's not like I'm out there sort of pioneering opera. But, yeah, I just want to have fun with it as well, because a lot of it's really cerebral and really hard work and very serious. So there's got to be a side to it that's a bit naughty and a bit risque or yeah, a bit more accessible. So, I mean, the Divas Inc. is really accessible because that gets opera into an audience that haven't paid to go to the opera. They're just at a function. So we just sort of slam opera in their faces, you know. The burlesque show is, yeah, sort of making fun of opera in a way, because you can laugh at it too. I mean, as I say, with Tosca, all the main characters end up dead, stabbed, shot, stabbed, and, you know, suicide.
Yeah.
All in the space of about 25 minutes.
Mm. So
it's a bit silly.
It is. And in terms of just talking about your, you know, interaction with audiences and especially on TV as well, Spicks and Specs, you've kind of built a very loyal fan base around you. In the Twitter community, when I said that I was going to interview you, I think Paolo said that you have the sexiest smile in opera.
Oh!
And Simon still remembers pouring you champagne on function for Oz Opera when you did La Boheme.
Oh, really?
What do you think it is about you that makes you so memorable?
Oh, I don't know. Look, I'm so lucky to get on that Spicks and Specs. That's a really that was just being lucky, actually. You know, that was just Ellie McGregor, who's in the opera Burlesque with me, goes out with Adam Hills. And she was busy one day and I got to do it, and then I've been asked back. So that was absolute luck, and it's so much fun. And I just pray they keep asking me back because I just love it so much.
I hope so too, because I haven't yet been able to see one.
Yeah.
Because I always miss it when, you know, I hear that the day after that you've been on, it's fantastic. And everyone, the internet goes crazy when you've been on.
Oh, that's nice. I should look at that and get my, sort of pep myself up a bit. But I love all the internet stuff. I do look at a lot of the opera sites, and yours is there. And I know that there's a Prima la Musica Poi le Parole, which is fantastic. Her site is great. And she must know that all the opera singers are reading it now. But I just love people expressing their opinions, and whether you agree with their opinions or not is not important. It's like the footy. We can all express our opinion about the footy. So why shouldn't we all express our opinion about opera? You don't need to sort of keep it in a glass box and revere it. It's so important to say that sucked or to say that was brilliant. And, you know,
it'd be nice if we could have audiences like at the footy, though, you know, coming to the opera with that sort of fanaticism.
Exactly. And to have the guts to just be able to talk about it like they talk about the opera, because everyone's an expert at the footy, and that's the way it should be at the opera too. We shouldn't all have a consensus. There should be a lot of disagreement about what's good and what's not. There's no consensus.
You've sung on a track called "The Electricity" about the avalanches, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, that was funny because I was just they asked me into the recording studio because they wanted me to do a bit of sort of pop vocals for them. And when I got there, I said, "It's not really what I do. Like, I'm here under false pretenses. I'm actually an opera singer." And they said, "Oh, okay, couldn't you just do a bit?" And I just started to improvise, and then one of the guys just drew some lines on a piece of paper. It was hilarious. It wasn't music. And he just said, "Can you sort of sing where those lines are along with this track?" Like, it was just completely sort of weird improvised stuff. And so I just sort of tried to do what he wanted, and it went gold in the UK. Not because of me, but, you know, I was on it. And, and then they've sampled it and put it on a few more tracks, and someone told me Fatboy Slim had sampled it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I have to find that.
I still didn't make any money out of it, though.
Oh, really?
No, not a cent.
Oh, it's the Planet of the Opera singers.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, talking of making money, like, it seems like you've got to work pretty hard to sort of market yourself in the opera world itself, and, you know, having something like Divas Inc. would kind of give you a bit of an edge, I suppose.
Yeah, well, everything else, like the TV stuff, has just fallen on my lap. As I said, I've never sought it, so that's great. But the Divas Inc. is, yeah, that's probably the only avenue to make money out of in this industry. Not that we've made a lot, but, you know, it's not a money making industry. That's for sure.
So, young people coming through, what would you sort of recommend as the ideal path for them to break out and kind of make these little niche?
Well, you've got to have
corporate gig.
The corporate gig thing. No, keep away, because I want them. Yeah, look, anything that you think, you've got to have a point of difference, I suppose. A point of difference. So if you go out and start a corporate opera group, don't do what's out there already. So, I mean, we kind of did a female version of what, there's another male version doing that same thing, but there's no women doing it. So we did the female version, you know. So you've got to find a point of difference. There's no money. There's not a lot of money to be made in the arts in general. So you have to be in love with it, and it has to be in your blood and bones, or else go and do law and get a nice BMW. When I did the Opportunity TV show, which was going out into the community and trying to find people who wanted to be opera singers, a lot of people came in who had proper jobs, and they were never going to leave their $200,000 a year jobs to you know, to earn a tenth of that being an opera singer. So
it's ridiculous that someone can earn that much money.
I know, it's not fair, is it?
Looking at that then, what sort of do we do as a community in terms of, you know, making opera relevant or, you know, being able to attract those sort of funds?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, Melbourne Opera, the company I'm working for at the moment, is amazing because they get no government funding whatsoever. And I don't know how they do it, but they put on operas just by selling tickets. And no other company can really do that. Every other company in Australia relies on good government funding and ticket sales. But, yeah, we just have to get it out there and get more people to come. And I think that the most important thing is to... people just have to come once and see that you can wear jeans and sneakers. Mm. There's no dress code. It's not posh. You can have an opinion whether you've got any musical training or not. I have an opinion on football and I know nothing about it, you know? So it's the same as that. We just have to get people in. So then we can do more performances. The more performances we do, the more money the singers will earn and the, you know, the set crew and the backstage crew will earn. Mm. So, yeah, just more bums on seats.
Mm. It's all about the bums on seats, yeah.
It is.
So with this particular production, tell me about some of the things that will get those bums on seats. What's beautiful about this that you really enjoy?
Well, the Athenaeum Theatre is fabulous. So that's one thing for an opera. It's like it's almost like a little mini La Scala. It kind of goes up high instead of out. So it's very intimate. So even if you're in the back row of the theatre, you're still up high over the top of the stage, which is really nice. There's three levels. So that's a nice theatre to come to. This production is traditional. So it's not, we haven't tried to contemporize it. So it's very accessible in that respect. You're seeing it in the period that it was written. The performers are people who are doing it for the love of what they're doing. So the chorus for Melbourne Opera are work for no money. They're there because they love it. And the orchestra as well, the orchestra are paid, but they've got day jobs. And they come in the evening and form an orchestra. So it's kind of like a whole lot of people coming together for the absolute love of opera. And I think that's what comes out. The sets are fabulous considering the budget. Mm. So people, and the budget is kept low, so the ticket prices are low. So people have to understand that they're not coming to the Met, that they're coming to a small chamber version of these operas. However, they've got a full orchestra, full chorus, and a very committed professional cast who love what they're doing and want to get it out there.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, I do hope that everyone will come and put a bum on a seat and bring a few friends and put more bums on seats and that they will come to love it as well.
Yeah, I hope so too. And as I said, the ticket prices are really accessible and young people really encouraged to come. So no matter where you sit in the earth, you're going to hear it and see it really well because it's intimate, small. And look, it's a great opera. I mean... everyone dies. That's what you want in opera, isn't it?
High drama. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much and best of luck with the opening night coming up this Wednesday, I think.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Antoinette. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was our interview with Antoinette Halloran. Well, that's the time that we've got for today. Please do stick around with Erica on Bent Notes because you'll get 2 hours of fantastic jazz coming up. There was a message that came in through saying that The Fool is beautiful, X love. There you go. It could be an X or it could be a 10 or it could be a kiss. I don't know. So as Antoinette Halloran would say, no doubt, she opens as Tosca this coming Wednesday, and you can check out the details, joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. As Antoinette Halloran would no doubt say, catch you next week, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. This has been The Fool and the Opera.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.